Diversity.
Here to have caused confusion, I will crash its board.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to another Office Hours. We are late this week because I was away on Tuesday. Finally, we're getting around to it. We are going to be talking about how Labour is doing. We haven't touched domestic politics for a while. And, well, as many people, I have trained the audience well. Whenever there is a closed question in the headline, the answer is no. No. The question is Starmer finally getting serious about the grooming gangs? I mean, I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't bet on it. And frankly, we have a good reason to be sceptical of Labour being serious on this problem. What is the first bit of evidence that we can point to that Starmer may be reticent about being serious about this? Well, I mean, let's be serious here, okay? At the height of Rotherham, the Director of Public Prosecutions was none other than Keir Starmer himself, okay? So during the height of the cover-up, the dude in charge of public prosecutions was the current Prime Minister, okay? Now, you don't have to go and watch Line of Duty to know that if there's a system-wide cover-up involving some sort of, you know, ring like this, it goes all the way to the very top, okay? All of the chiefs of police, all of the people who were involved at the time, complicit in some way. And the fact that Starmer was there, okay, is something that, frankly, I'm surprised that hasn't been more of a political football. Like, why didn't the Tories attack him on that? Why doesn't Nigel Farage bring this up? Why isn't it brought up almost on a daily basis? I think I saw Elon Musk bring it up once or twice, but I mean, that is the number, I mean, call me cynical, but that's the number one thing, detail, that I can never get out of my mind when I hear the words grooming gang and Keir Starmer in the same sentence. I was like, hold on a second, he was the guy in charge, okay? That's the first thing, okay? The second thing is that when people were calling for a proper investigation, okay, including Rupert Lowe, including many other people who've done work on this, back in January, I'm old enough to remember that Keir Starmer called it a far-right bandwagon. That was in January of this year. He called it a far-right bandwagon, okay? So, you know, he's been brought kicking and screaming to do this, right? Far-right bandwagon, he's been brought kicking and screaming to actually do this. Then they announced there was going to be an inquiry. I think it was in June. This was yet another of dozens upon dozens of U-turns from this Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. You know, it's the island of strangers and we're getting tough one week. It's, oh, I'm sorry I said that, the next week. It's, oh, we're going to get tough this week. It's, oh, we're going to go back to shit. Like, they can't decide, this Labour government, what they want to be, who they want to be, okay? Stories are in the press at the moment that Tone is pissed, right? That, like, this is actually a story now. Tony Blair is pissed off. And, I mean, he's pissed off for two reasons. One, he's been kicked off the board of that Gaza thing that he was going to be heading up, right? Blair has been sent back from that. The Arab states were like, too much baggage. Come on. The architect of the Iraq war is going to oversee the peace plan. Pull another one. So that's not going to happen, which means that the Gaza plan is going to fail now. If you remember my analogy, I said it will only succeed if Tone stays. Well, Tone is not staying. So that's off the table. We were hoping, if you remember, that it would keep Blair occupied for a couple of years. You know, if he's over there, if he's in Gaza, he's not here. Unfortunately, he is here now. Tone is back. The Emperor is back. And There was a story in the press a couple of days ago that he has plans, radical plans, to turn this Labour shit show around. He did an interview with the Home Secretary, Mahmood, yesterday. The papers are full of claims that Blair is plotting to replace Starmer and that he is earmarking Mahmood as the one to do it. Tone, come on, mate. Mahmood. Mahmood, the public are not going to accept Mahmood as the Prime Minister. So that's not going to happen. I mean, yeah, it's going to be Nigel Farage versus Britain's first Muslim woman Prime Minister. I mean, come on, that's not going to happen. But that's what the press are saying because he talked to her. But he basically has come in and said, look, there's going to be a shakeup. Okay, you can have a look in all the papers have carried this paper story just in the past couple of days. So Tone is back, you know, and maybe he's like, come on, you need to get hold of the immigration. You need to get hold of the grooming gang stuff. Make this go away, basically. So now what's happened, basically, that the reason that everybody's talking about grooming gangs this week is that finally a chair has been appointed to do this review. And they're arguing over whether they're going to actually look at the ethnic component of it and, you know, if the victims were white, are they going to take that into consideration? A lot of the people who are big on this, Rupert Lowe, who we'll have a look at in a second, and many, many other people who've talked about this have said, look, you cannot look at this as just, you know, something in isolation. There is an ethnic component to it. And again, Starmer's reluctant. So this is currently a live conversation. If you ask me, look, I mean, what are you asking for here? The mafia is going to investigate the mafia, okay? Whenever the British system fudges something, they do an inquiry, okay? I'm old enough to remember the Chilcot inquiry, the bloody, you know, the Hutton report, the, you know, the one that looked into, you know, did Tony Blair mislead the country over Iraq? It was all a fudge. It was all bullshit. And lo and behold, none of the people ended up accountable for a single thing. Not Campbell, not Blair, not one of them. It was a whitewash, okay? There's already been one of these into the grooming gangs, which was also a whitewash, okay? So what they do is they pull these inquiries when they want to waste more time, you know? Oh, well, the inquiry, that will take another 18 months. At least we can say we're doing something, you know? Kick it down the road. And in this country, everything has that. You know, the Hillsborough disaster, this is completely unrelated. There are still victims from that. There are still people, okay, who remember that, who feel that the response was fudged. They've never had proper justice. There's never been a proper investigation because it's all this bollocks that they end up actually doing. So if you ask me, I'm extremely skeptical about this inquiry going anywhere. Okay, that's my personal view. It's just mafia investigates the mafia all over again, only in this case the mafia have got, you know, blood all over their hands, and it's like, well, okay. So maybe at best it'll be like, okay, well, this one police guy was at fault, or this person here should have, but it's never ever going to be like all the way up to Starmer, or like none of it is going to touch any of these people. It never happens. You know, Obama and Hillary and Gitmo, you know, that also hasn't happened, has it? Let's face it. So these people never, ever, ever get their comeuppance, ever. So I don't have any high hopes at all for this inquiry, unfortunately. That's my honest assessment. I'm going to have a break. We're going to have a look at some ads. When we come back, we're gonna have a look at what Talk TV, my slop right outfit of choice, okay, the fat sloppy pig has now been fired for being racist or something. He's on YouTube as a lone independent voice now, Mike Graham. So it's all the other people. I have deliberately not included Julia Hartley Brewer because frankly I can't take Brewer. I cannot take Brewer, even if the topic's this. I just cannot take her. We're going to look at Ian Collins, my favourite, and a few of the other people from Talk TV. But first of all, who've been discussing this. Rupert Lowe was on Talk TV. We're going to have a look at that. But first of all, pick up a course at the academic agency. Why don't I play the Shakespeare one? It's been a long time since I played the Shakespeare one. Let's go with that one. Christmas is coming up. Pick it up today. And then we're going to look at exactly what's going on with this.
Who was Shakespeare? What if everything you have been taught about Shakespeare is wrong? What you need is a non-woke university-level Shakespeare course based on solid scholarship, stripping out all recent nonsense since 1980. A comprehensive introduction to studying Shakespeare, featuring 14 lectures and covering 8 major plays. A Midsummer Night's Dream, As You Like It, Twelfth Night, Measure for Measure, Hamlet, Othello, King Lear, and Macbeth. Foundations of Shakespeare. Buy it now from the Academic Agency.
Right. There's been a kind of super chat from a member who's been a channel member. C123 has been a channel member for 6 years. And he's saying, could there be a special badge if you've been a channel member for 6 years? Do you know what? When I made the channel memberships, I had never any conception of it ever reaching 6 years. God, how the time has flown. I still remember making those badges. So why don't we? I've got a really good idea for who should be. I've got a really good idea for who should be the the six-year badge. Hold on a minute. I'm going to make I need a transparent background. I know who it can be. I hope you're ready for this, comrade. You know who it's going to be, don't you? You know who it's going to be. let me put it in. Hold on a minute. Okay. That may take a little while. While I'm doing that, why don't I lay up my first clip as I'm getting that ready? Why don't we go to Rupert Lowe on the Grooming Gangs? Where is Rupert Lowe? Hold on a minute. Because I'm kind of interested to. Yeah, here we go. Here's Rupert, and I'm gonna find the. I'm gonna change the badges.
Of Restore Britain. Good morning, Rupert.
Good morning, Mark. You're lucky to have me here this morning. I fought my way across Sadiq Khan's war zone. I had to change tubes once. Fortunately, my
good start. You're lucky to have me. I fought my way. You know. To the castle beyond the Goblin City.
Phone wasn't nicked, but here I am, just in time for your interview.
Well, we're delighted to have you. Is this government wicked?
I couldn't concur more with what you've just said. I think this government says one thing and does another. I think it's got a Fabian agenda, which I did use that term in the House when I asked the Chancellor a question this week. I honestly don't think they either know or care about the damage they're doing to the real economy in Britain. I think they've got this agenda, Mark, to try and make everybody equal and make everything equal for everybody. And, you know, my favourite quote is Solzhenitsyn, who said, people are born with different capabilities. If they're equal, they're not free. And if they're free, they're not equal. And I think that in a very short, succinct summing up from a man who basically spent a lot of his life in a gulag standing up for what was right, I think he's spot on. And I think everybody needs to absorb and think about that. So I think they're running a Fabian agenda. I don't think they know what the truth is. I don't think Rachel Reeves is qualified to be the Chancellor. I don't think Keir Starmer.
Yeah, he's correct. He's correct on all of these things. Now, C123, double check. You should have a new badge. Just post in the live chat. Let's have a look to see if the new badges come in. Yeah, has it come in? Has it come in? Oh, yes. Yes! I love it.
Was qualified to be the Prime Minister. And frankly, Roger Bolton's cant, which you've highlighted just now, is that's yesterday's game, and it's time people woke up and got real now.
What are the ideological roots of this Fabian agenda of which you speak?
Well, I think it's basically an agenda to try and undermine a productive capitalist society. It's got its sort of roots in a form of Marxist. And Keir Starmer, remember, is a Pabloist and a member of the Haldane Society. He's got all the badges of what I call Marxist sort of belief. I understand his mother imbued him with a lot of this stuff. And, you know, I don't think you can, when you watch what he says and how he says it, it's just not believable. So I think they've got a malign agenda.
Okay, I want Rupert to get onto the off the budget and onto some of this stuff, right? Some of the law and order issues and the grooming gangs. Okay, we need to move past the budget stuff.
We'll never be able to record 100% of offenders' ethnicities. Your reaction?
Well, I think that's outrageous, and we've actually done a post this morning. I think we've got to actually look at all the data and work out why. And as you know, I've got the private rape gang inquiry that's been crowdfunded by over 20,000 concerned citizens. I'm afraid that there is a correlation in that case between Pakistani.
Oh, apparently nobody's actually hit 6 years yet. Maybe years the eunuch has if she's around. But I've got a feeling that channel memberships were only introduced 5 years ago. So, you know, when the 6 years comes, you'll all have a lovely surprise as to who. Well, you all have figured out who it is already.
Muslim men and these rape gangs who've been operating throughout the UK. They're not in silos, they're everywhere. And from the research we've done, it's very worrying. So I think not to collect the data is a huge error. And what it tells me is they're worried about the outcome of collecting the data, which is going to tell them the truth. So, as you probably saw, the government's appointed a Labour apparatchik to chair their rape gang, the statutory rape gang inquiry.
Yeah, a crony. Mafia investigates mafia. And Rupert knows. He knows the score. So all the stuff I said already, it's just because Rupert is sensible and speaks sense, you know, he knows the score already. So he's just going to say what I said at the start in a more articulate manner, I'm sure.
I did offer my help. They have effectively declined that in the chamber this week. Mahmood said, send me any information I've got, but don't offer to meet her. Well, I can tell you we're planning on, we've got our hearings in the first 2 weeks of February, and we are going to have our hard-hitting report out by the end of March. And we're not frightened to talk about the facts. And if the facts mean we have to talk about ethnicity, then we have to talk about ethnicity. It's as simple as that.
And why is ethnicity important in relation to crime? Don't you just have good people and bad people?
Well, I think with the rape gang inquiry, and people like Emily Maitlis say, well, the majority of rapes are committed by white men. Well, that may not be true, because we actually live in, surprisingly, still a white majority country.
It's just going to be Piers Morgan versus Nick Fuentes all over again, right? Leftists pretending they can't do per capita. Leftists pretending that they don't understand, you know, oh, well, look at the raw figure. Most of them are done by, you know, I hate this statistical game. It drives me up the frigging wall when they do this. They have to stop doing this. They do it on every issue as well. Anyway, Rupert, again.
But if you look at the rape gang activity across Britain, which is, by the way, linked with the taxes, which we've uncovered, this taxi registration in Wolverhampton, I think there is a correlation there with the lack of respect which Islam holds working class girls in, and this is a very unpleasant business which has been allowed to.
I mean, I think I would probably slightly rephrase what he said, because, you know, I'm not sure if Islam per se has a view on white working girls. I think it would be more accurate to say that certain people within the Muslim community see non-Muslim girls, British young working, working class white girls or whatever, as fair game, as like that they don't apply the same moral standards. That's basically true. I don't think there's anyone who would seriously look at what has happened who wouldn't say that was a really important component of why it happened, because they saw those girls as fair game. And the tragedy of the grooming gangs is that those girls did not have any political champions in the system. They weren't anybody's client group. They weren't any, their supposed champions, which is meant to be the Labour Party, let's not forget, had dropped them. They had decided that they don't deserve political representation. So nobody cared enough, basically, to be their champions in the political class. There were people outside the political system who were their champions, okay? But people within the political system were like, no, we're not going to look into this. It's inconvenient. It doesn't fit in well with our narratives. So this is like, it will go down in history as one of the greatest tragedies in all of British history, what has happened here. It's good that people are talking. It's good in a way that people are talking about it, but it is still one of the, if not the worst thing ever to happen. And purely because they didn't have anybody to speak up for them, they weren't considered important enough to have a champion at the table.
Fest for the last 20, 25 years. Look, there are good people and there are bad people, but there are crime trends, and I think you have to collect all the data to be able to work out where the correlations lie and actually what's creating the issues. If you don't have that, you can't make decisions. It's a bit like, the whole of government accounts that I'm going on to talk about at the Public Accounts Committee in a minute. The fact of the matter is, if you put rubbish into your system, data is very powerful, but rubbish data is very dangerous. And I think a lot of the data that's now being collected by the state, Mark, is either deficient or it's based on unaudited accounts, incomplete accounts, and it is misleading. So if you put together lots of misleading information, you just end up with one big misleading mess.
Indeed. And you know that you mentioned misleading. What's important for my viewers and listeners is to have the truth. And you
how can it be difficult to collect that data? Because presumably, if the copper nicks somebody, they have to fill out a form, and this is one of the things I remember. The police are actually a lot of the time are reluctant to make an arrest because it's a ball ache for them. It's about like 3 hours of paperwork or something. Now, presumably, at some point, the copper sits down and they've got a tick list, and they have to make an assessment of what race, what ethnicity the person is. Okay. And I would suggest that in the vast majority of cases, they could just look at the person and they'd be like, well, that's a white guy, that's a black guy, that's probably a mixed race person. Now, do they have to ask them? This is all, well, we have to ask where you're from. If you've been arrested, they're going to have your paperwork, they're going to know where you live, they're going to know everything about you. So if it's a foreign national, they'll have that information. I don't understand how this should be the easiest stat possible to collect data on. It should be the easiest one possible. So how is there even a question over this?
You mentioned regarding ethnicity that if it's an aggravating factor, which, for example, in the grooming gangs it was, because these young white girls were targeted because they weren't Muslim and they were not from within that Pakistani Muslim community. So that's a racially motivated crime.
Yes.
Setting aside illegal immigration, most people of sound mind think that we've got to stop the boats. But there's a conversation to be had, Rupert, about the crime statistics around people that have also entered the country quite legally. There is an issue with ethnic crime in this country if you look at the numbers.
Look, Mark, we found that is the case in our Pakistani rape gang inquiry, which we launched because effectively the government said they'd have one and they didn't. They tried to silo a few areas which would not be representative. Nigel Farage promised one and didn't have one. So we've done it, and my team's done a great job on collecting all the evidence from the witnesses and getting the bundles ready. It's taken a lot of work, and that's all ready to be heard at the hearing. Look, the fact of the matter is, if you're going to make good decisions, you need good data. And the problem, the reason we got the Pakistani rape gang issue is because people were frightened of being called racist. They were frightened of actually speaking the truth. And at the end of the day, that happens when you get a monopolistic BBC, which starts peddling DEI, which has been happening increasingly since the Blair government. It's been embedded into almost every civil service department. It's been embedded throughout the country in all our big corporates. And what it means is people are frightened to speak the truth. And what we have to do is purge ourselves of that. We have to repeal the legislation.
Remember now, Rupert Lowe's an MP. He's actually a politician and he's talking like this. Isn't that incredible? Isn't it incredible that we've got at least one honest guy in Parliament?
Legislation which is forcing people not to confront the truth. It is the truth that matters, and it doesn't really matter how unpleasant the truth is. We have to face up to it. So crossing the street to the other side, as we know from the Bible, is...
In a just world, he would be the Prime Minister. He absolutely would be.
Is a bad idea. Mm. And at the end of the day, we have to meet all this head on. We cannot move forward as a country until we allow the sanitizing effect of the truth to cleanse us, because I think we've been infiltrated with deceit. I think the country has become dishonest. And until we can actually have a frank conversation based on the facts and the truth, we can't really move forward. That's my view.
Most definitely, the truth will set you free.
Okay, so let's carry on with some other videos along these lines. So let's have a look at Ian Collins.
Speak to James Matthewson, regular with us on the programme, former Labour advisor. I think we might have touched on this about a year ago, James, at some point. What is it that's caused offence with some people? Why would it be so wrong?
Knowing nothing else about this guy other than his physiognomy, right, I'm going to make a prediction that what this guy is going to say is going to be non-truthful. But let's see, right, that's my bet. I'm going to bet, based on his face alone, that this guy is not going to be honest. But let's have a look.
Wrong or incorrect to consider ethnicity, race or culture in a crime?
It's not so much about the actual proposals, I think, with this, Ian. I think it's kind of the question as to why Labour are so focused on it and why the Labour Party itself is making sure to mention this. Mike Tapp's an interesting character.
So the actual thing behind this story is that Mike Tapp, who is an MP and is a Blairite and has been tipped to go far by the Toadster and various others, has actually said that the inquiry is not going to shy away from talking about ethnicity. Okay, so that's stuff that Rupert was saying. And clearly, you could make an argument that the pressure that Rupert personally is putting on this issue is forcing Labour to make some concessions. Okay, like I said, I'm really sceptical as to whether a Labour government under Keir Starmer personally is ever going to be fully truthful on this issue, right? But the fact is that this Mike Tapp has said we are going to talk about ethnicity, and this has caused the left wing in Britain, the Green Party, the Corbyn, Labour activists and so on, to go crazy and start calling this Mike Tapp, who's a Labour minister, far right. I wish I was making this up. I'm not. This is the state of British politics. So a Labour politician now is being accused of far right concessions because he's willing to talk about ethnicity in this inquiry, all the stuff Rupert was talking about. This is where we are in the current state of the conversation within the political class, and this dude is a Labour guy who's going to talk about it. I don't know what he's going to say. based on his physiognomy alone, I predict he's going to be annoying. But let's see.
He was on Question Time not that long ago. He seems to be one of these people in the Labour Party who really wants to deal with trying to bridge that gap between communities that the Labour Party's lost and the support that they've lost to reform, and trying to, you know, have honest conversations about things like immigration and all the rest of it. Now, this is a separate issue to that, but ethnicity is something that is obviously it's a touchy subject, and it's a touchy subject for a reason.
Now, hold on. Why is it a touchy subject? Is it a touchy subject because all the stuff that Rupert was just saying, okay, if people victimised white girls because of their ethnicity, okay, and they were coming from the Pakistani community, why is that a touchy subject? Is it because it makes it easier to call that out? Like, why is it a touchy subject? Let's see.
Reason, because, you know, we have a history, and we have we live in a world that has been before us, and events have come before us, and we have to take things in the context of which they've meant. Now, of course, if you're a person of colour, or you're a person of a minority ethnic group in the UK, and you hear a politician saying, you know, that you think that there's links between crime and their ethnic group and all the rest of it, of course you're going to feel, you know, targeted by that. So,
well, hold on. This is where I can't understand. It was literally done by Pakistani men, and it was literally done because they saw those girls as easy targets, as fair game. How can he say, like, it's literally just the fact of the matter. And anyway, let's he's annoyed me already. let's see if we can get this go. Calm. Sensible centre left, remember.
It's about making sure that whilst the reality of situations and data and statistics can often be without context and, you know, presented in a certain light by certain people, it's making sure that the politicians who are actually driving this are doing it for the right reason, and they're not doing it to try and, you know, kind of deepen divides and divide and conquer, which is the oldest tactic in the book.
There is irredeemably a link here, though, isn't there? If you have tens of thousands of victims and the perpetrators are all Pakistani Muslims, then you're going to look at something in that, surely, to make the connection in that this particular aspect of child. I have no truck in understanding most child abuse is committed by white men. I understand that. They're mostly in family structures.
Said, you've just said yourself, this is the language that we get into. You've just said if the perpetrators are all Pakistani Muslim men.
But they were. They literally were.
Within the grooming gang inquiries that this will mostly focus on, that is true.
No, it's not true.
It's not true. It's not, okay.
No, not all grooming gangs are committed by Pakistan.
Oh, fucking hell. It's so annoying. I can't stand it. I told you, didn't I? I said, based on his face, he was going to be annoying. And here he is. He's taken less than 2 minutes and he is driving me. He's being more annoying than Piers Morgan. Fucking hell.
Pakistani Muslim men. You just said all, and then you've said that the majority are still committed by white British men, which they are.
So if you want to look at, for example, Rotherham, Rochdale, Huddersfield, Halifax, Bradford, West Yorkshire, Oxford, Derby, I mean, I could go on, then you will find that commonality that I've just raised.
Yeah, and if you look at Glasgow, every single rape gang has been white.
Yeah, and you want to look at proportionality of that?
But we're not talking about Glasgow, are you? We're not talking about these other ones. We're talking about these specific ones and what was done there and the blind eye that was turned to them and the specifically ethnic component of it, which was that these girls were targeted specifically because they were white and British or white and English. There's no other way of talking about it other than to focus on the specific. And he's like, oh yeah, what about these other rapes that happened in Glasgow? We're not fucking talking about those ones.
I don't suppose you do, because it wouldn't be a convenient answer for you.
It's not about convenience at all, Ian. I'm not trying to push some agenda here.
No, but there is clearly a very specific issue in a group of people from a smaller percentage.
Even Ian Collins is getting wound up by this. This is the millennial woes meme again. Or Morgoth. He's just playing the hatchling. It's so annoying when they do this. they must realize how triggering it is, because it means you just can't talk about anything. And the fact is, they don't do this on other issues. They didn't do it with Stephen Lawrence. They didn't do it with George Floyd. They only do it in this context. And this is what winds people the fuck up.
Of the population carrying out a much wider percentage of these crimes.
No, I think the problem's men, Ian. I'll be totally honest with you. I really do think the problem...
Right. I'm going to get a scar. Fuck off. I'm going to just let it play and I'll be back.
As men, and we can say that it's men of certain ethnic, kind of minorities are more prevalent or it's more prominent in these groups or that group. It's men in general. And it's different types of crimes in different types of communities. That's always been the case. That always has been the case. But, you know, it doesn't change the fact that every day women are killed and murdered.
No, that is true. No, nobody is. But are you seriously disputing that there isn't a massive...
Oh, I think the problem's men. Oh. Right.
Disproportionality within this aspect of child sex assault, grooming gangs, represented by men of Pakistani origin.
Say the word per capita. Say the word per 1,000 or per 100,000. Somebody in the media, just say the word per capita.
I don't understand what the question is.
You do understand the question. You do understand that. Are you suggesting there's not something of note, to put it very lightly, in the correlation and the commonality of a...
Just remember, Ian Collins is a sensible centre-leftist, friends, okay? He is on the record as being a sensible centre-leftist himself, okay? And even he is getting annoyed.
A disproportionate representation of the population, but an over representation of this particular crime in grooming gangs. It's massive. It's there for it's industrial scale massive, James. You must be able to see that.
Well, I mean, obviously these grooming gang scandals, you know, Rochdale, Rotherham, all of those. Yeah, absolutely. Of course they are. But I don't think it's a factor in why the crime has been committed.
Oh, it is literally central to what this is. I mean, people talk about, you know, what is it that gets people so angry? It's this guy. It's this just denial in the face of facts, just denying it like this. I don't want to say what I would do if I was in power. Because I would have this guy here, this guy on the right, looked into. Like, why are you coming up with these excuses? What is, like, why are you, as an individual, coming up with these excuses? I just don't get it.
I don't think it is.
Could it be, because I've always thought, I don't believe, by the way, that... it's because you're a Muslim. Let me get that out there. I don't believe. I know they do, and then they find arguments. They go, "Oh, it says in the Quran that it doesn't say any of that stuff." Right? I agree. So that's
and I also see he's sensible, centre left, right. I also agree with Ian, right, that it's not like a central tenet of the Quran or something. It's not happening for that reason. It's happening because these specific Pakistani men saw those white girls as fair game, okay? And whether they maybe they justified it through their friend-enemy distinction or whatever, but the reason it happened was because of in-group and out-group. That's the whole reason it happened, right? It's not haram to do it to them or something like this, okay? That's how they justified it. That's why it's happened. This guy has to stop denying that.
The red herring that is thrown out there, and then the next thing that comes on the back of that, people go, "Oh, you know, Muslims are allowed to lie to you. They've got a special word for it." Can't remember the word. Yeah. Now, that's also nonsense. You know, it doesn't apply in this respect. So all of that culturally, however, if you've come from a certain background, and I've always thought this was about racism more than it's about, you know, I don't think it's about religion. I think it's about racism, basically. Are people who felt culturally they might have use their religion in their own minds, because I don't believe anyone who commits these kind of...
I agree with Ian Collins. I think Ian Collins is basically correct. it was racist. It was driven by ethnic and racial reasons. I agree with Ian Collins.
Crimes could really call themselves religious of any persuasion, frankly, because they're so horrific, whether you're Christian, Jew, Muslim or whatever. But there's clearly something here where young white girls and vulnerable white girls were seen as easy targets. And
yes, he said it. Thank you, Ian Collins. That's what I've been saying. Thank you, Ian Collins. Fucking hell.
And worthless enough, which to me defines it as racism.
I don't get into the mindset or the psychology of people who commit crimes. It's a complex.
But that is, like, when you're investigating crimes, you have to look at motive. You have to look at the mindset and why it was done. Taking my jumper off, I'm hot.
Issue, right, as to why.
Well, that's what an inquiry will do, surely.
Well, it should, yeah, exactly. But I'm not a crime expert, I'm not a criminal psychologist. However, the point here, and I think that we have to...
Well, why the fuck are you on here then? Why are you spouting your mouth off then? If you don't like know anything about crime, why are you on here as a talking head? Maybe it's just, maybe he's on here just to wind us up.
Take away from this, as you've said, is the fact that there are those lines so that people do ask these questions. And politically, it creates an upset because people don't want to have those conversations. People want to have honest conversations. And people think certain things have been swept under the rug. There is a conspiracy way of thinking that's taken hold in this country thanks to people like Tommy Robinson, thanks to people like Lawrence Fox, thanks to people who were pushing a narrative. I mean, this guy who's running for the mayor of London, Ant Middleton, right? An absolute disgraceful guy who just... every day gets up and tweets something different about Muslims, right?
No, see, I'd agree with him, right? That the people like that can, the counter jihad, as I call them, can profit from all of this, but they wouldn't get anywhere near, right? If you weren't on here making up bullshit, denying it, just denying plain facts, covering it up, coming out with all this nonsense that you're... They wouldn't have, half the audience they have, they wouldn't be able to put that stuff out there if you weren't just covering it up all day, every day, for the past 15, 20 years.
At the moment, in this country, if you are a Muslim and you feel like, you know, you're a British Muslim and you feel like you're being targeted by people and being, you know, accused of all sorts of things and that you have a predisposition because of your faith or your ethnicity or your...
One of the quickest ways for the Muslim community to get some quick wins in this country, okay, so people stop doing this, would be for them to come out as a community and say, look, these things that happened were really bad. The guys who did it, they did it for ethnic reasons. They were racist. It was really bad. More could have been done about it. Like, they could do so many things that would make people see them in a better light. Fact is, how many Muslims, like, instead, it's all of this bullshit all the time. So that's why Ian Collins is banging his head against a brick wall in this interview, and why I'm so irritated, and why so basically the entire country is fuming, because none of those things happen, ever.
Your background, your racial background, a predisposition to commit crime. That's monstrous, but it's not new, Ian. It's a tactic.
No, I get
the reason, and listen, I will say, we are seeing this, and I know people say, oh, Trump derangement syndrome and all the rest of it. Look at what Donald Trump is doing with Somalians right now. He's trying to paint a certain group of people out as inherently bad and inherently criminal, and there's a huge effort to do the same here with anybody connected to Islam.
But you're talking about a small group, and okay, some of those small groups do have loud voices, and I understand that. I mean,
why can't you just come out and say, look, there's like these guys who did it on an industrial scale, more than 20,000 girls. Everybody knows these details. Why can't you just come out and say what they did was racially motivated? It's a terrible thing. It should never happen again. We're going to look at it honestly. We're going to make every effort to make sure this doesn't happen again. And we're going to encourage, and the Muslim community have to come out and say, we're going to make every effort. You know, instead of that, we get all of this bullshit. Okay, so yeah, you're gonna give the narrative over to the Tommy Robinsons and all of these other people who are going to, you know, they make stuff up. They're going to lie. They're going to plant disinformation in the space. It's going to foreign interests, all the rest of it. All that stuff's going to happen if you continue to obfuscate and refuse to look at reality in the face. Of course, that's going to happen.
They're not a small group. They have a lot of pull now.
They do, and people assume that they are kind of telling facts rather than their own sort of opinion. I mean, it's almost a fetish to somebody. I agree with you about some of the stuff that's written. It's like, that's all of that stuff's ridiculous, isn't it? I saw somebody else calling themselves a journalist today.
The reason we're watching this Samuel Twalley dweeb, right, the guy in the chat, is because this mindset of this twat here that we're watching is why this happened. This mindset is one of the key reasons why this country is in the state it's in. This absolute inability to look facts in the face, describe reality as it is. I mean, think about what he's saying here. Think about what he's saying. If I can't talk accurately about what happened to over 20,000 British girls, because think of what will happen to the Muslim community. I mean, it's a meme. It's stupid.
I mean, it was the most extraordinary.
I would never call myself a journalist because I'm not a journalist, right? I come on, I give my opinion and I give commentary, and I'm biased in doing so. And people should be aware of that.
People might say, okay, people might say Robinson, love him or hate him, was one of the voices. He wasn't, you know, there's a bit of an urban myth that he somehow uncovered the grooming gangs. He really didn't. There was some incredible journalism going on at the Times when they, I think back in 2010, looked at this. A lot of it couldn't be printed for many reasons. But he did bring it to the forefront. That's true.
I don't care. By tweet?
Okay, that stopped. Let's go to the next one. They cut off that for some reason. Let's see what else. I mean, we're gonna keep on looking at this because I want to see where the conversation is on this, to see what the actual reality is on the ground. Let's have a look. Here's Ian Collins with a different dude. Hopefully this one won't wind us up.
Is with a social commentator who's just suffered enough from being stuck on a train.
Let us make an assessment of his I reckon he's going to be less annoying just based on his face alone. He's going to be less annoying than Samuel Twalley was just now. He's got to be better than the last guy. Anything's going to be better than him.
I know that train. I know that driver, frankly. He's got it in for us. You, of course, talk a lot about, you know, prisons and punishment and this kind of these sort of areas. This one has gone on for years and years. A contributor there saying even back to the 70s, this was a discussion about grooming gangs. There is a disproportionality, it seems, on the link between perpetrators' background.
Where's a society in the world where people just tell the truth about stuff, where they don't cover shit up, where they talk about reality as it is? Because I'm at the point where I'm just ready to go wherever that place is. Do they tell the truth in Russia? I don't know. Where's a country where this bullshit doesn't go on? Honestly, it's getting to the point where I cannot believe in 2025 we're still at the point where somebody's still living in that level of denial, that twat that we saw in the last. Oh, it drives me up the frigging wall. Sooner Boomer Truth dies, the better for everybody on the entire earth, I tell you.
Ground, and when I say background, some will say it's ethnicity, some will say it's religion, others will say it's cultural. Where are you on this whole story, David?
Well, I think it's very clearly the case that this particular form of abuse is linked to a particular ethnicity. And we know this from the Baroness Casey report back in June, so it's straight...
Oh, thank God. Thank God, he's straight in. Thank you, David. The handlebar moustache. We'll have to look out for them.
Strange that we're still having these debates and people are acting as if it's not known. So, Casey was very clear that there's a particular community, Pakistani Muslim men, who are significantly overrepresented in these crimes. And you look at some of the data from Rotherham, for example. There was this thing called Operation Stovewood, which is a police investigation into what they call non-familial child sexual abuse and exploitation, which is we would call grooming gangs. There they found that almost 9% of all the Pakistani Muslim men in Rotherham were believed by the police to be involved in this form of offending.
9%. 9%. That's 1 in 10. Fucking hell. And then you have to think about, right, just think about it. If 1 in 10 people are involved in something, each one of those people knows another 10 people, right?
There's a huge overrepresentation. That's
massive.
Yeah, it's not a few bad apples. I mean, in comparison, I think it's something like 120 something times the rate at which white British men were committed.
120 times the rate. I wish he was there when Tani was there to just when that guy was like, yeah, what about Glasgow though? You could just, well, it was 9% there, and that's 120 times the rate, the one in Glasgow. So what the fuck are you talking about, Samwell?
These offences. So we know that this particular community do this. These men have targeted Sikh girls and white girls for decades. You mentioned the 70s. There actually are some clippings going back to the 60s and 50s where you find these stories which sound a lot like...
I mean, if that stat is true, that it's 9%, every single one of those people would have been connected with at least 9. Like, that's just the, you know, any network effect. Any single person is going to be connected to lots of other people. So you then have to ask about the level of complicity in that community. That has to be looked at if that stat is true. And that there has to be a serious question. And people from that community have to come out and say, yeah, people were turning a blind eye. Yeah, we had an idea something was going on, but we didn't say something. If there's going to be any future for the quote-unquote Muslim community to have good relations with the British people, quote-unquote, somebody from that community has to be like, yeah, like, what's gone on here is a travesty. We need to make sure this never happens again. Here are the things that we're going to put in place to make sure nothing like this ever happens again. Right? I think that's fair. And that's not collective responsibility, because if it's 9%, okay, you're already well over the threshold where it's a couple of bad apples. Okay, that is a much bigger problem than that. So anyway, let's carry on.
Like what we would now describe as grooming gangs. So we know that a particular community of men is particularly disproportionately committing these crimes and has done for a long time. That's part of what the inquiry is now looking to uncover in detail. And one of the reasons that we know it is because of Casey's report, but we also know that a lot of, as you were saying, a lot of the men who commit these crimes do them out of a sense of ethnic superiority.
Yeah.
You know, you see it, I can't say these things on air, but if you go and read the transcripts which have been published by Open Justice, some of the things these men said...
And this is, some of these are recent as well, these transcripts. They are absolutely horrendous.
They are. And we can't say what they said, but I think people should go and read them, and you will see that again and again and again, these men use very, very racialized language. They make it clear that part of the reason they are abusing, raping and torturing...
The evidence is there. See, this is where we're going to know whether this inquiry is a fuckfest and a whitewash, or whether they're actually finally going to do something about it. To come back to the title of the stream, are they finally getting serious? Wouldn't hold my breath, to be honest, by the state of that Labour guy just now. You know, maybe Mike Tapp is secretly based or something, but I wouldn't hold your breath.
These girls is because they are white and they see them as lesser and they want to target white girls. And they use this horrendous language. So we know it's a crime committed by a particular ethnicity. We know it targets a particular ethnicity. It's a racist crime. Although We also, it seems, have never prosecuted anyone for racially aggravated rape for these crimes, which I think is concerning. But we also, it was covered up because of this squeamishness about racism, you know, this fear of describing this ethnicity issue.
So is it, when you look at what the choice of words from the Home Office, where they will look at ethnicity, religion, culture, all of those are separate attributes, if you like. They're, obviously, they can all come together. But is it, would you pick one of those words, or would you say all of them? I would imagine the religious side, in their own mind, because, as I said to our previous guest, you could argue that, you know, if you are the sort of person that carries out these kind of crimes, you surely have no religion, no right to religion, because there's no faith on the planet that would say, yeah, that's fine to go ahead and do that. But I'm pretty sure, as we saw in the Catholic Church, many of those abusers would have felt sort of shielded almost by their kind of ecclesiastical framework around them.
Well, I think it is clear that there's been a lot of shielding of men. And you see it, you know, if that many men are committing these offences, people must know. And also there's a particular characteristic of these crimes where these guys will, you know, get hold of a young girl who they're going to abuse and rape, and they will contact friends, relatives, and invite them to come and join him, which is, again, a particularly strange and awful aspect of this sort of offending. So what aspect?
There must be a lot. I mean, if they were going to be serious about this, there has to be, like, what is it, accomplice to a crime? Or, I mean, I'm not a legal guy, but I know that, like, if you know a crime is going on and you don't do anything about it, that there is some recourse to come back to that person, because you're like an accomplice, aren't you? Is there no recourse to go after some of those people who knew about it or who helped it or helped to hide it? Surely all of those people, not just the people who did the grooming or the rapes or whatever, all of those people need to be held to account. Absolutely. Is the word culpability? Culpability.
Of it is ethnicity, culture.
Complicity. Yeah, accessories before and after a crime. All of these sorts of things. I mean, if this investigation was serious, it would be a major thing. And it's like, well, we're not going to let this go, right? The British state is just not going to let this go until every single person involved in it sees justice.
Religion. I mean, ethnicity is often misunderstood. Ethnicity doesn't mean skin colour. When we talk about ethnicity, we're talking about a particular group which will have, you know, sort of racial characteristics and cultural characteristics, not religious characteristics. So in this case, we're mostly talking about Mapuri Pakistani men from a particular area of Pakistan. We don't really know which of those factors is the most important, because no one's ever really been able to study this, because everyone's been terrified of being called racist. So maybe this will be the beginning of that process. And I think those who are opposing these investigations, if they really don't believe that Mapuri Pakistani men are massively overrepresented in these crimes, they should welcome a full inquiry, because presumably that will...
This guy clearly knows an awful lot about this. I trust what he's saying.
Exonerate this community.
Yes, I mean, you'd have thought so. And I've also heard people say there's a kind of contagion in this criminality, in that, you know, a grooming gang begets a grooming gang. The word gets around, as it were. Hey, guys, you know, there's these young girls. They're, you know, they're up for a party and anything can happen.
I mean, if they were really serious, they'd have to, like, they would find all the people who were either directly or indirectly involved with this. And they'd say, look, you hold a dual citizenship. You've lost the right to live in this country, basically. It's just unacceptable. So you lose the right to live in the country and you have to go back to Pakistan. I mean, just basically that is what needs to happen. Can't have a situation where you have whole communities like this, you know, the one that he's describing here, who did this, where it's 9%, like, that can't be allowed to persist. You know, and when Farage comes in, if Farage comes in as the Prime Minister, it will be like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a government to get serious, to make real changes, to actually do something. Do you think he's going to do any of that? Somebody needs to.
And they're fine with it. And so, you know, mates in other towns get hold of this. So there's also that aspect too.
Again, you see this in the transcripts. There are cases where these girls are trafficked around the country.
Yeah, literally around the country as well.
Men are brought from London, from Birmingham. Those are the two cities, that, by the way, where we've never really seen meaningful prosecutions into these gangs. Mm. But from what we see in the transcripts, it's clear that men there were raping these girls. So I think there's a need to do this proper inquiry that looks at those cities as well.
It's interesting that some there are MPs and others, we spoke to a guest earlier, on the left, David, who are absolutely losing their mind that there should be any consideration of ethnicity. You know, the argument that always comes back, which is no argument at all, frankly, is, well, you know, there's grooming gangs that aren't from that background. There's white grooming gangs. Yes, there are. But we're talking about the over-representation, the industrial scale. And I mentioned some of the towns, the obvious Rotherham, Rochdale, Huddersfield, Halifax, Oxford, Derby. I mean,
white pill's the wrong word, but it is good in a sense that Ian Collins is being so good on this, like, just, you know, with the facts and just being open about it, you know, having this guest on. This is a better type of conversation than the one that was happening a few years ago. So, that, you know, that is good.
Length of the list, you know, in terms of where these...
But I hesitate to say that, though, because what happened here turns my stomach. It really does. I mean, when the history of this period is looked at, this... what we've been looking at here will be seen as one of the great stains in the history of this country. You know, it'll be thought of as like, I mean, I'm trying to even think of a, you know, it'll be thought of in the same breath as some of the, like, the all-time, you know, Richard III or something, or I don't know, it'll just be, it's just one of the great crimes that has ever happened.
Specific crime. It would only be right and proper, wouldn't it, for an inquiry to look at every factor? I mean, if you were Columbo looking at this, of course you would raise all the common factors in...
The guy asking in the chat, is it still containment, though? Well, the thing is, unless drastic action is taken along the lines that I've outlined, right? I mean, it's one thing having an quote-unquote inquiry. What people want to see is these people brought to justice, okay? And not simply... you know, locking the guys who did it up, but all of the people who were involved in the cover-up, the, you know, the complicity, not just within the community, but any person who was in a position of authority at that time, right, needs to be held accountable in every single sense. And one of the irritating things that the system does is they'll just find a couple of scapegoats and they'll be like, well, it's been dealt with now. But all of those people who are in those positions are still around, including the guy who was at the very top, who's the current Prime Minister.
Network of perpetrators.
You know, like I said, with Rotherham, where 9% of the Pakistani men in that community were believed to be involved in committing these crimes.
Yes.
You know, if you have almost 10% of a community doing a particular kind of offending, which is vastly, you know, orders of magnitude more than other ethnicities and other groups around the country are doing...
Tell you what, that statistic of 9%, I didn't know it was that high. I haven't heard that stat before. It's just gobsmacking. Like, that is insane.
That's a problem, and we have to be honest about that. And I can understand why, for people on the left, they find this idea threatening. You know, they, a lot of them rest on this argument that, you know, we're a blank slate, everyone arrives here, everyone's the same. Yeah. But there are, of course, differences in culture, religion, and ethnicity.
Is that figure really true? I've never heard that. 9% seems extraordinarily high. Think of how big Rotherham is.
Ethnicities which are real, and we have to live in the real world. And these crimes have historically been committed and are being committed by a particular group. That we have to be honest about that.
Absolutely. And of course, to look at it sort of the other way round, is that, you know, one of the reasons this inquiry is happening because these crimes were largely ignored, and they were literally ignored because of ethnicity. Mm. So, I mean, that's almost the answer.
This is the key as well. You know, and again, Baroness Casey talked about this.
How big... That figure, to me, sounds too high. How many Pakistanis live in Rotherham? I'm just... Oh, right, okay. So the actual population, the Pakistani population of Rotherham is 7,600. Okay, I mean 9%, so it's 9% of that 7,600, which actually gets... So now, I believe the stat now. I thought Rotherham was a lot bigger than that. I thought the population was bigger than that in my mind. But still, it's still staggering. Don't get me wrong. It's just like I was wondering what scale we were working with because it just, you know, okay.
It's a lot in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, to me, 9%, if you think of a network, 9 or 10% touches every single person in that network. Okay, so, if, you know, because every single one of those men will be part of a family or they'll know, you know, like I said, they'll know 10 people. So you very quickly get to almost everybody in that community being complicit. Just by the, I mean, it would be almost impossible for it to be going on at that scale with that many people involved for lots of other people not to also know. It's just impossible.
She said that lots of organisations, instead of examining what was going on and really confronting this racial ethnic aspect of the offending.
Simon has just DM'd me the source of that stat. Okay, so here we are. Here is the source of the statistic. Okay, this is simply in Rotherham itself. Here is the stat that he's getting this from. It is just, my gosh, it's just mind blowing. It's just mind blowing. It really is.
Shied away from it because they felt it was difficult. The councils were telling the police not to report prosecutions.
Yeah.
You know, there was even one horrendous case where a social worker arranged for a victim to be Islamically married to her abuser, and the social worker attended
the wedding. Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, so there's really?
So that social worker who attended the wedding needs to be investigated. They need to be held accountable. There needs to be something done to that. See, this is what I would love to see. This is, I'm sure every single person watching this would want to see every person who was involved held accountable in some way.
This catastrophic complicity in the abuse for decades by public servants, often because they were scared of being called racist.
And I think somebody who did race it was actually sent on a racial awareness course for their trouble. I mean,
there was a Home Office.
I don't know if I can take much more of this because it's just, it's one of those top, I mean, it's one of those things that just riles you up so much. Oh. Now let's do the super thanks and the super chats. He was good though. That guy David Riley, he seemed to really know his stuff. He was quite a good guest. And Ian Collins, in fairness to him, did a good job covering the issue. Right, he gave the leftist guy a chance to talk. Push back on him where it was necessary. Because, you know, when it comes to this, the facts are just so in your face. It's so in your face that, you know, for him to sit there and deny it like he did, I mean, it just... For them to still be playing this, you know, ostrich in the sand game at this point. All right, let's have a look at some super thanks and some super chats, and then we'll get out of here. I don't check. I mean, one of the reasons I don't check in on that story that often is because it's a motive. It just makes me angry. Okay, how can I get the super thanks on this? Hold on. Okay, hold on a minute. can't figure out how to get super thanks up on the screen. That's annoying. Hold on a minute, guys. I need to. My tab of super thanks is not opening properly. Maybe I'll do it now. Has YouTube moved where they live now? Please don't have moved it. That's so annoying. supers if they move them there. No. Oh, brilliant. There's a chance I won't be able to do this, the super thanks, because I can't see them. I can't see them. All right, we'll hit the super chats, and if there's been any super thanks, I'll have to catch them up next week. The ones on entropy, oh, even that's signed me out now. This is going well. All right, let me have a look at this screen here. Okay, so even that one hasn't come up. Not going well at all. Right, let me have a look at this tab then. Altia says, Tony Blair, New Order speech when? What would you want it to include? Well, don't give me a... I mean, it would need to include so much stuff at this point. But I think the first thing would be you have to get, you know, immigration under control. That would be the first thing. You'd have to cut back the excesses of the managerial state. You'd be a smorgasbord of stuff. I mean, let's face it, it's Tony Blair, so it has to be stuff that appeals to him. Be like, well, just replace the entire civil service with AI, with Mecha Bentham. That would be better than what we've got at the moment. Tragic Vision says he's been here for 68 months. Zero X says, thoughts on Lowe's Great Yarmouth First Party? Well, the fact that they've stormed it is quite good. And I saw it as slight vindication for my idea that if Rupert ran against reform, I think he'd win. I really do think he'd win. I genuinely believe that the mood in the country is such that Rupert Lowe would win in any election if given enough, if he was able to get himself on TV and get himself seen, heard in interviews and had a debate with Farage and so on. Over the course of a campaign, I believe Lowe would win. That's my honest belief. Wayfarer says, leftists often insist on either being way too specific, this one groomer wasn't Pakistani, and then skipping to the sensible centre, jumping all the way to this too unspecific, the problem is all men. Yeah, and that is exactly what that guy did. That is exactly what he did, and it was infuriating. Lewis Shaw Moffat says, AA, the 9% figure was just for Rotherham. Yes, yeah, just 9% within Rotherham. That's exactly right. And I've looked it up, and it seems like that is correct, you know, as per the stats we had a look at. Deplorable says, I have the proper tone. Cow Kudistawin says, did any talk songs make your 80s bangers list? No, talk did not make it, I don't believe. One of the best Christmas acts, in my opinion, Merry Christmas. Let me just have a look at 80s bangers, better than Madonna. I've been doing the 90s one, still haven't finished it, but in the 80s list, was talk there? Let's have a look. Maybe they were. Hold on a minute. No, they did not make the list. I definitely considered them, but they ended up not being on the final list, okay? Coney says, if your time to you is worth saving, you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are changing. TikTok Zionists. they're doing this thing at the moment where it's like, it's time to fight. You're going to be scared of us and all this sort of stuff. Like, you need to fear us. And the more they do that, the more people are just not fearing them. The more they're kind of laughing at them, the more they're not taken seriously. So I don't really understand, there's a real disjunction between where they think they are and what's actually happening. Because what's actually happening is that 4 million people watch Fuentes on Piers Morgan in the space of 3 days. What's actually happening is that every single time any one of these people posts anything, they get ratioed to oblivion. And, you know, yeah, okay, they may have top-down control of many different organizations and of politicians and, you know, they have Ted Cruz, you know, in their pocket or whatever, but there's a limit. There is a limit to what top-down control can achieve. And frankly, some of the stuff I've seen coming from TikTok, coming from Instagram even, you know, there's a lot of very angry people out there, including one video I saw on Twitter earlier on, and I assume the guy was left-wing, who was kind of in FedPost territory, to be honest. So I don't really know. I don't get the impression that their current strategy, whatever it is working. You know, they talk about 80 years. I don't think they get another 80 years. Good graces, right? I think everybody's kind of not, you know, everybody's kind of seen what's happened at this time. And then people aren't really in a mood to take the BS anymore. So it's hard to say what's going to happen. But I think the next thing that will probably happen is that you will start to see genuine organization or counter-organization or people simply just not caring, just literally just not caring what they have to say. And I think that's the worst thing for them, because people literally just don't care what they're saying anymore. You know, Tucker just laughs, Fuentes just laughs, you know, but that has an effect on everybody else as well. Nobody really cares anymore. And the people who do increasingly just look deranged or insane. So, yeah. And then the more the power becomes naked and seen, the less effect they have. Like, the more the kind of, it's kind of already over, if that makes any sense. Like, once you've lost the power of the taboo, once you've lost the power of the hold, the fear that people had, it's kind of like, right, okay, well, you can lock everybody up. You can put everybody in jail. You can outlaw people. You can, you know, try to, but you're not going to be able to do it to everyone. And the more they do it, the more unpopular they're. Like, so it's kind of a catch-22 for them, right? There's no, you know, it's over. It's basically just over for them when it comes to the iron grip. I'm not going to say they're going to lose all their power, but when it comes to what has been, clearly we're over that at this point. I would suggest for the guy who sent chats into Entropy, unfortunately I can't see it. I can't see Entropy anymore. I don't know how to get that super chat back, I'm afraid. Ryan says, my Instagram Reels algo gives me random American high school meme pages saying the bad teachers and admin take APAC money. Zoomers are all right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, that happened. I mean, I'm not on Instagram, but the reason that it's interesting is because Instagram is a very kind of female-coded, non-political platform, right? But it's got over there. So in the end, them buying TikTok, like all these things, like buying TikTok, Barry Weiss bringing on Alan Dershowitz, it's over, guys. It's over. Like, none of that stuff is going to work. Taking pastors over to Israel, all it's over, dudes, right? You're not going to be able to get back to where you were. It's just over for that, all of that. And frankly, not a minute too soon. But as we've seen on this show, there are other problems. There are other problems beyond that as well. I wish I could get that guy's super chat back up, but I just can't see it. I will try once again to get the super thanks back up, but I was not able to see them earlier either due to the tab, literally like the little drop-down thing where I get the super thanks not opening today. It's just not opening for me for some reason. Oh, here we are. Super thanks. Oh, you're right. Okay, right. Okay, super thanks saved. Drat. Damn a blast. I wish I thought it was going to go. Okay, all right. Oh, God, there's been tons of them as well. Flipping Nora. Okay, when was the last When was the last office hours? A week ago, wasn't it? The absolute... Okay. All right, well, so we'll start from 7 days ago. On the question of why the elite don't give ground to populism to maintain their own power, hear me out, says Alphonse Rides Again. This was on my video, How Elites Hijack Every Movement. He says, Masons and Reform Jews sincerely believe in millenarian universalism. They also have ready-made networks for covert coordination and for bribing and bullying other elites into conformity. Further, they have enough wider profile to recruit a cadre of willing non-elite middle managers to enact their will. Is it really just that simple, or have I gone full school of schizo? Well, I mean, it is really about having the right people in the right places, as per elite theory. And I mean, this is one of the reasons I look at Stalin, right? Because in Stalin's USSR, it all becomes super naked, right? The friend-enemy distinction, you know, elite theory and practice becomes super naked and visible. So for Stalin, it wasn't enough for them to say, well, yeah, I'm a comrade and you're a comrade. I'm a commie and you're a commie. He wanted to look at every single individual, every single appointment, every single person. Are you a friend or are you an enemy? Because if you're an enemy, you're out. If you're an enemy, you're out. And it was really, like for Stalin, it was super important, the individual personnel. And this is something that I think becomes super obvious when you have a look at harder regimes like that, because it's just more visible. In ours, it's a little bit more hidden, but it is absolutely the case. I mean, look at the way that Starmer needed to actually purge the Corbynistas. The individual personnel was important. The actual people involved is always important. You know, I did something on that a couple of weeks back where I had the network map of how you capture like a little think tank with 10 people in it, you know, turning white circles into black circles or whatever. I mean, it's that is the game in a nutshell. ContraPoints video, which attracted a lot of attention. I got a lot of views, that video. Carl made a video on it, which sent a ton of people over as well. So I'm always grateful when Carl does that. I thought it was a mind-blowing video personally, but somebody says, she was right. Nice title, laughing. I would say 90% of all the comments were just about that. I mean, I didn't do it deliberately. I was genuinely, because I remember 7 years ago, I made a video about ContraPoints, and that my channel, which was much smaller back then, and ContraPoints was smaller back then as well, but still I got raided by her fans, right? And I got all sorts of, like, it took me weeks and weeks and weeks to get rid of the rabid ContraPoints fans bugging me, right? So I thought, well, I'm going to just be respectful, because the point of this video is to look at her video, right? The point of the video was not to get into the trans debate. So that is why I was respectful. I wasn't baiting. I was genuinely trying to avoid beef with ContraPoints and her crazy fans. I don't know if they still exist. I noticed that ContraPoints hasn't made a video for 8 months or something like that. I just, like, that was not the, I wasn't trying to pick that fight. So I was just doing a little bit of politeness, a little bit of, you know, okay, whatever. Because the whole point of the video is about, I mean, it was really interesting because that ContraPoints video came out last week. And then we got the real life version with Piers Morgan versus Nick Fuentes, where Piers Morgan literally did all that, like, they literally had a version of that exact conversation from 7-8 years ago, and literally nothing's moved on at all, really. I mean, so ContraPoints accurately predicted where we'd be, if that makes any sense. And still, there's no answer. Still, there's no comeback. Still, it's exactly the same. Adnor says, promised I would donate for this. Well, thank you very much. That's on the ContraPoints video. Benjamin Church says, do you suppose that leftists' fear of right-wing arguments is more closely related to their latent recognition of those claims' alignment with reality, or just adherence to boomer truth that the MCGs hoodwinked an entire nation with their Hugo Boss swagger? I don't really know. I mean, honestly, so much of it just comes down to the power of taboo, basically, which is why the Piers Morgan Nick Fuentes interview was so interesting, because Fuentes just said, I mean, what Fuentes was doing throughout that interview was like, look, dude, I don't care about your religious stuff. Like, I don't care about the boomer truth. I don't care about the taboos. They have no you have no power over me. And so often, the taboo stands in for any sort of argument. So once that's deflated, dismantled, doesn't have any power anymore, then an actual argument has to take place. So, and as we see, like even on the grooming gangs with this guy, this Samuel Tarly figure with Ian Collins today, he didn't really have any, like he literally just denialism, literally just has no answer and is just going to, you know, po-facedly deny it. Fresh Bobber says, say what you want about ContraPoints, but her German pronunciation is great. Yeah. Benjamin Church says, interesting point about censorship. I'd agree with your past self that it works. Would you say that it failed here because of media fragmentation, alternatives, and their lack of control? Or the softness of cancelling versus hard power? Or the fact that the boot was lifted under Elon Trump too? Were they just too late, or something else? No, I think there's more to it. I think that they overplayed their hand with the censorship. Let's not forget, it wasn't just on BLM and racial stuff and these sorts of things that people were cancelled. It was COVID. It was Ukraine. It was questioning anything to do with the 2020 election. I mean, that those were three massive mass censorship events all in a row. And I think it got to the point where so many people were affected, so many people had been banned, so many people were being cut out, so many huge... I mean, let's not forget, Stefan Molyneux had a million subscribers. So it got to the point where there was like a critical mass where the actual method itself loses effectiveness. There is what they call in economics, diminishing marginal returns on anything. And so I think censorship hit diminishing. They just tried to do too much, right? And it became just obvious that, oh, hold on a second, we're not allowed to talk about anything here. Lord Pepsi says, Uncle Butcher from The Boys, oi, good video. From 2342 and on, it gets to the matter at hand. By the way, people are still arguing over pronouns. Lol. Yeah, tell me about it, Lord Pepsi. Jonah says, this is on the elite, how elites hijack every movement video. How familiar are you with the topic of historic street? It was an extensive debate of German intellectuals around boomer truth in the 80s. I've never heard you talk about it. I am not familiar with it. That's why I'll have to note that. I'll have to have a look into that, because that's something that I've never heard of. I will bookmark that. Very interesting indeed. Jake Conn says, I haven't read the book yet, so I'm not sure if you've covered this. The book he's talking about is Applied Elite Theory, of course. But surely one of the best fundamental solutions to the complete disenfranchisement of women. Is the complete disenfranchisement of women. We might even be able to keep some form of democracy this way. I'm less convinced by... I mean, I just think it's democracy in general. If you have a look at Carlyle, he was opposing parts of it, like when it was very first getting going. And he said, look, the logic of this will just end up with everybody. Like he predicted the first black president in 1840 or something like that. He was like, well, because that's the logic of the thing. It's not going to end anywhere. right? And so he, like, it stands to reason. But the root issue is the nature of democracy in and of itself. Ra says, hey, Todd, that was on the corporate oligarchy that controls America. And Todd just says, hey. That a guy on the same video says thanks. And Sheev on last week's office hours says, hey, EA, thank you for all the great videos. Well, thanks a lot. The Gaming Week series you produced last year over Christmas was good fun and a welcome break from the depressing state of politics. Is there any chance we'll see more gaming videos this year? Yeah, why not? I tell you what, I might make a pile of them and then it'll give me something to put on the gaming channel down the line. My poor gaming channel, my poor culture channel. I've been too busy this year. Do you know, I did 15 outside appearances this year. One of them hasn't aired yet. That's why I was in London on TV. I did 15 outside appearances this year and produced tons of videos and lots of, so I've been really busy. And I finished two books, Applied Elite Theory and the Shakespeare one that's coming out. So I've been a very busy boy this year. And unfortunately, my purchase of the Steam Deck has been co-opted. The Steam Deck has been co-opted by AAA and the missus. So I don't even get a look in. I did play XCOM to completion. I played XCOM 2 from start to finish. War of the Chosen. Finished that. I got a good number of hours into a game called Wildermyth. Wildermyth, that's pretty good. So I have done. So I've been playing Dead Cells on and off. Balatro, some of you know about. So I've got gaming stuff to talk about. And the Steam Deck is really good, by the way. It's really comfortable and cool screen, and it's a great bit of kit. But yeah, it's been a heavy year, really, hasn't it? Been a heavy year. So maybe we'll do some crisp, like, lighter stuff over Christmas. That should be fun. All right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. And I will see you next week.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.